Chapter 2, Ian. The sun was hot for spring, but Ian knew he could manage. He had just 2 more rows to sew before turning his attention to butchering a hog. His wife could make a grand dinner from it this evening and days to come if he kept the predators from the larder. He paused in his sewing to wipe his brow. 3 men on horseback topped the distant hill to be silhouetted by the morning sun. Ian frowned, sensing that these were no ordinary guests. There was a feel about them that was wholly familiar, but he could not remember just what it was. Scratching his chin, he watched them as they approached. When they were close enough for Ian to see the sunlight flash off their golden hair, he took precautionary measures. His old sword, lovingly cleaned and oiled, was hidden nearby in the barn. He made way to get it and did not feel better until it was in hand. Then he leaned casually against the barn door, sword tipped to earth, and chewed a bit of grass. When they were near enough to make out their faces, they reined the horses in. One put his hand up, palm out, in a gesture of peace. "Well," Ian spat, "you're here. Now, what do you want?" Elves, these riders were, and therefore a danger. Ian dealt better with dwarves than elves, even though he was elven himself. Dwarves were forward with their intentions and usually a good deal more honest. Elves, especially mages, were something else entirely. "You are Ian the Northern Thorn?" asked the peacemaker. "Maybe," Ian said, drawling the word out for all it was worth. Casually, he pointed his sword tip to each elf. "Who wants to know?" "Lord Ian," the rider said, making a half bow on his perch. He looked ludicrous. "We have ridden a long way to find you. It concerns the 5.
"The 5 what?" asked Ian suspiciously.
The rider opened his mouth to speak, but a gesture from one of his companions stilled his tongue. The other rider urged his horse up a step, leaned forward, and grinned. He was feet away from Ian, who did not appreciate the intimacy. "Ian," said he, "don't make our lives more difficult than it is. We're not here to arrest you for treason, or burn you, or whatever else you might imagine." "No?" The sword whistled when Ian gave it an experimental swing. Clearly unimpressed, the riders exchanged a single glance. "Is that because of what happened the last time Nosfada sent someone for me? Which makes me wonder, what was the reaction in court when they received the pieces?" The second rider chuckled to himself, then dismounted. Immediately, Ian struck the earth with his sword. Lifting it into a guard stance, he held himself ready while the sword rang a high-pitched tone. The air stood still while the sound faded. "I am handfast," the second rider said. He stepped closer and ignored Ian's shift of balance. "I came with a message from Warfin. McKeegan summons you, Ian, the Northern Thorn, upon the very geese that holds your spirit." Ian, entirely against his will, suddenly remembered Aramina. The first thing he had to remember out of the entire ordeal had to be the dark were-creature. Annoyed, Ian resisted the urge to kick the nearest object. Not that the elf standing before him would not have looked better sporting a few bruises. Ian lowered his sword and sighed. "Well," he muttered. His 3 visitors waited patiently. Ian gazed into the horizon, still remembering, and frowned. The hills were beginning to show color with the first flowers of spring. Ian had no flocks to keep them grazed. Pickett would love those hills and have a jolly time trampling them. And there was someone else. Not a companion, but someone who liked flowers. Someone who really liked flowers. Someone he should be wary of. Ian could just taste the memory. Ian's eyes flicked back to Handfast and stayed. "I remember you," he said harshly. Handfast had fought alongside Ian years ago. The elf still had that whiplash scar across one arm. His sleeve was rolled up as if to proudly display the blemish. "I thought you might," Handfast said with a trace of a grin. "Now, shall we talk business?" The sun set unnoticed outside. Handfast's companions, McGuire and Neolk, sat near Ian's fireplace after a hearty supper of ham and early greens. Sulking at the table, Ian kept his thoughts to himself. His guests were sent from his master in Warfin, and this meant nothing but bad news. Anyone from Warfin was bad news, although Handfast could be trusted to a certain degree. Then there came a point in which Ian found himself not trusting the elf at all. Not that he trusted any elf, including himself. The servants had been sent to their quarters, and Ian's wife was ordered upstairs. The dinner mess could be cleaned in the morning, he had told her. She had obeyed without argument, obedient little thing that she was. Ian felt a glow of affection in her direction and spat into the fire to cover it. He glared once again at Handfast. Handfast ignored Ian's barely concealed malice. Without touching it, he stirred his spoon around in his empty bowl. The Atma made little sparks off the utensil, which was wood, but otherwise did no harm. Ian disdained such frivolous uses of magical gifts, and Handfast knew it. The faster the spoon moved, the more irritated Ian looked. It was rather amusing. McGuire and Neilk were hired swords and not concerned with any discussion other than their own. They played sticks and bones in the corner, alternately cursing and accusing each other of cheating. Ian was more annoyed with them than Handfast's mischievous activity. Ian flicked his fingers, wasting a precious bit of Atma, and the spoon flew from the bowl. It bounced into the fireplace, where it promptly caught on fire. A log popped and sparks jumped. Handfast chuckled, leaning back and drinking his glass of mead. McGuire mumbled something faintly murderous to Neilk in the background. "What if," Ian said casually, continuing a conversation they had begun during dinner, "I refuse to do this?" The things Handfast had told him this night were not agreeable, not in the least. Ian knew better, but the thought of killing his two guests and hiding the bodies were not far from his mind. Handfast snorted with mirth. "As if you would dare," he said. "I think what you should be asking is where to go first." "All right, then," Ian said in his slow drawl. "Where? Do I meet them there or wait?" "Neverlos," Handfast said, "and wait for the others to arrive if you are first." He set his cup, now empty, down on the table. There was more mead, indeed, an entire barrel nearby, but he felt too lazy to get it. Ian would surely not, and the wife and servants were banished from sight. Apparently, Ian sought to protect his family from the dangerous intruders. Handfast was only annoyed that he was forced to serve himself under another's roof. This smacked against all rules of etiquette and hospitality. Not that Ian had been anything but surly and impossible to deal with. "There is a sanctuary house there," Handfast continued, pushing the cup a little away. "The priestess will be waiting for you there. She knows what to do and is already on her way." Ian remembered Neverlos. There had been much blood, and even Aramina the priestess had been quite shaken. A pleasant memory indeed, he reflected as he fought to keep from smiling. "Have you nothing further to tell me?" he asked. "Of course not," Handfast snapped. "I know only what you need to know for now. Have a little common sense. McKeegan would not trust even you with the details if it were not necessary." "I suppose you will not be accompanying me." It was not a question, merely an observance of fact. Handfast nodded affirmatively. Ian stared into the flames a while longer, listening to McGuire and Neil play, or rather argue. They seemed to take much pleasure in their personal conflict. "To sleep, then," Ian said. "I should start early tomorrow. What shall you do, my friend?" "Wait here," Handfast said calmly. "I'm under orders to protect your wife, should you fail." Ian went cold inside and resisted the urge to look up the stairs. His wife clung long to his embrace before he mounted their best horse to leave. He leaned down from the saddle and patted her bulging stomach before whispering into her ear, "I will be back before my son comes. I promise you that, my Joalee." She flashed her bravest smile and said, "You best be back before your daughter arrives. I wouldn't want her to greet the world without your strong arms to protect her." Ian nodded, letting her win their argument this one time and flicked the reins. Too soon, Joalee was a waving figure swallowed by dust. Somewhere in the house, Handfast and his crew drank his mead and argued over dice. Ian wanted to burn the house down and carry Joalee away, but he knew better than to try. "How long has it been?" Ian wondered to himself as his horse's hoofs plodded patiently down the road. Memories of settling down to make his own stead were always clouded as if they were only a dream. Time did that, as well as simply not wanting to remember. One thing was irrefutable. He had been given that land for a reason. One obvious reason was that it was close to a break in the veil. Ian chewed a piece of grass, spitting to the side occasionally. How convenient to place a valued servant so near a doorway to air where the mortals dwelt. And then McKeegan seemingly had forgotten him, which had led Ian to believe he was no longer in use. If McKeegan had wanted Ian to do something through the veil, the reason was lost forever, especially in light of this new task, whatever it may be.
Ian knew better than to question McKeegan's sanity. The elf was merely fickle. It was his way, and thus far McKeegan had won an entire kingdom merely by deciding he wanted to rule. All of Fionn's rulers did the most peculiar things, as if they trusted to blind luck and foolishness to keep a country sound. It had worked for generations, but Ian sometimes felt that even luck such as that could not hold out forever. McKeegan was an old fool, and sooner or later it would be his downfall. Yet even mortals flocked to McKeegan's banner. Ian could not stand the creatures, and wished McKeegan would either kill them or send them home. Their atma was weak. They bred like flies and died quickly. Their fascination for Ian's people and the divine fire within drew them like moths to light, or repulsed them just as strongly. Ian had participated in dozens of slog rides, mainly to patrol his borders and witness the mortal people's ways firsthand. He did not wholly approve of them. Ian found them to be crude-mouthed and sometimes brutal, even when compared to crueler breeds of two-leg. They were almost completely without honor. The bravest mortals had the tendency to swarm over the land like ants and dig without the slightest thought for the local inhabitants. Their music could be delightful, and occasionally a mortal bard had the ability to play a sprightly tune. But overall, the lure of enchanted gold always became too strong. Twice, Ian had to dodge attempts on his life. By mortals. Thieving, lying, filthy mortals. Not that mortals were the only dishonest creatures in the world. The most honest person Ian had ever known was the mage, Rory. Rory could stretch the truth, or lead you to believe falsely by omitting certain facts and letting you make your own conclusions, but not once did he ever truly lie. No, he was not like the priestess, whose every breath was questionable to Ian's ears. Reminded of other things he had long ago forgotten, he spat out his piece of grass and scowled. He camped that evening near the highway leading to Neverlos. He kept his fire small. The last thing he wanted was to be found, and firelight was a giveaway in the dark. Chewing a bit of dried meat, he sat staring into the tiny flames blankly. Then he noticed he was being watched. His observer was a young elf standing on a nearby hill like a statue against the oncoming night. Ian considered the silhouette a moment, blew out noisily, and got to his feet. It would be inhospitable not to invite the stranger to share his fire. He waved his arms once, then he sat down again. The youth bounded down the hill enthusiastically and slid to a deep bow at Ian's feet. A harp case hung from his right shoulder with a worn leather band slid forward and made a musical bump against his knee. "Angus, at your service," he declared breathlessly. He stood with a flourish and pushed the case back to its proper place. Ian grunted and resettled by the fire. He did not care for formal introductions. Confused, the bard waited just long enough to be sure Ian would not be introducing himself. Then he also sat by the fire. Ian handed him a bit of cheese and dried meat. "Your mother either had a sense of humor or a good sense of character," Ian observed while the youth ate his meal, "to have named you after the god of mischief." Angus grinned fleetingly. "Yes, my mother does like to stay entertained." He swallowed his last bit of cheese and reached for the water skin which lay near his foot. "What do they call you?" The water skin was passed to Ian, who switched it for a full skin of wine. Wine Ian had no trouble sharing with company, but there were occasional times that good drinking water was more precious than gold. The youth grinned his pleasure at the change in the spread, thinking himself honored. "My name is Ian." Angus's eyes grew wide. "Surely not the Northern Thorn," he whispered with awe. "Oh, pleasure, Lord, to think that I, a lowly bard, would be graced with the hospitality of one of Moirfin's greatest heroes." He shook his head in wonderment. "I did not say I was the Northern Thorn," Ian said, scowling. "Ian is a common enough name." "Oh, yes, Lord," Angus said agreeably, his eyes lit with a twinkle. At least he did not press the subject. The wineskin was passed between themselves during the following silence. Angus idly poked a stick in the fire to keep it burning. He was smiling to himself. Ian ignored him while he oiled his sword. When the skin started to go limp, Ian packed it away. "Where are you bound?" Angus asked as if to break the silence.
Bored with the fire, he turned to his pack and began unpacking his sleeping furs. Intent on his work, he only heard Ian spit into the fire. His furs were mangy-looking and probably had fleas. Ian forbore wasting Atma to charm any such pests away from his person. "To see an old friend," Ian said after a brief pause. "Ah," Angus said knowingly. He began to pick up rocks, large and small, to throw them into the darkness. "Uncomfortable things," he muttered to himself while he worked. When he had thrown what he felt was enough, he spread his furs on the ground. "That should do." Amused, Ian watched until his guest was finished. "My guest asks me questions," he said once Angus was completely settled, "but offers nothing concerning himself. Where are you going?" "Wherever suits me," the bard said with an airy wave of his hand. "I was thinking Neverlos. The people there love a good tale as much as anywhere else." "Of course," Ian said, faintly annoyed. The last thing he wanted was to be tracked by a faithless bard. "How very convenient." "From there I might go to Nosfada," Angus said. "Then usually I just go straight to the temple in Tek Donnan to gather more news. Bound to stay there," he yawned mightily, "for months." He closed his eyes and shifted until he was comfortable. Angus was asleep almost immediately and snored faintly. Quietly, Ian spit to the side. It did not bother Ian that the boy did not offer to take first watch. His carelessness was his own business. When Ian wanted to get some sleep, he would set protection spells around the camp and be secure. What bothered him was that Angus was going to the exact same destination. The last thing he wanted on this trip was a companion. In this case, the last thing he wanted was someone who knew his face. In much the same way as he had done before with Handfast, he pondered killing the boy. After a while, he rejected the notion. It was far too much work. He would wait to see what developed later. To Ian's relief, his fears were unfounded. Angus, when he woke the next morning, industriously packed his belongings. Refusing Ian's offer of breakfast, he pled that he did not want to waste the morning. Marching straight away with only a jaunty wave of farewell, the bard was gone before Ian had his horse saddled. The farmer was glad to see him go and bade him good riddance. Rain clouds hung low in the sky, making the air gloomy and heavy with rain. It drizzled at the best of times, and rain fell in sheets of blinding silver at the worst. If Ian did not have to hurry to Neverlos, he would have found shelter to wait it out. He skipped lunch and barely allowed his horse to rest. Water ran in rivulets down his neck and back. Those tiny streams joined to make bigger ones that ran down his saddle into his horse's legs. The horse snorted to itself, shaking its mane, and trudged along in the mud. Evening had deepened into soft gloom before the rains finally lightened up. Ian camped at a crossroads and made his fire beneath the weathered wooden marker. It was hard to keep the wood lit given that it was drenched. In the end, Ian was forced to resort to Atma to set the wood on fire. The enchanted flames glowed greenly over the area but offered little warmth. Miserable, Ian shivered in his cloak and thought of his warm house in Joelie. "Hi!" someone shouted in the gloom. Ian reflexively grabbed his sword. "Hi!" they shouted again. It was Angus, dripping wet but looking none the worse for wear. He emerged from the darkness and rain to stand just beyond Ian's camp and grin. For the briefest of moments, Ian was reminded of a hopeful mongrel begging for scraps. Ian considered the situation. He could turn the bard away, or he could allow him by the fire. When Angus sneezed, the decision was made. Before long, the youth was huddled by the fire. The last of the wine warmed their bellies. Angus sneezed again. "I'm glad I found you," Angus said through chattering teeth. "Looking for me, were you?" Ian asked suspiciously. He had not put his sword away, although the rain was sure to rust it. "No," Angus said with a chuckle. "It's just that a bard is a sorry sight in the rain with no fire to warm himself with. I'm sure to catch a cold." Mournfully he sniffled, as if to say he had caught one already. "Even a green fire with little warmth is welcome. My poor harp! I can only hope I mended that hole in her case well enough to keep her dry." Ian did not respond, turning instead to the difficult task of drying his sword enough to put it away. He could put the fire out. It made no sense to keep it except as light against the darkness that surrounded them, but he did not. His companion obviously appreciated the fire as he curled himself into a sodden ball as close to the flame as he safely could. With misgivings, Ian settled to sleep after Angus was snoring, his sword nearby. A boot by his hand startled him awake. With a yell, he grabbed his sword, rolled, and crouched into a defensive position. Angus, whose boot it was, stood dumbfounded, staring at Ian with eyes round as coins. It was late morning, and Ian had overslept. "I was just," the youth stammered, "I was just going to wake you before I left." Ian forced himself to relax and lower his sword. He ran his fingers through his beard, feeling foolish. "My apologies," he muttered. "'Twas a reflex." The bard nodded solemnly, stepping back a pace. "I wouldn't let it be known that I had frightened the Northern Thorn from his sleep," Ian snarled. "I wanted to give you this," the bard squeaked, offering a golden medallion strung on leather. "Why?" Ian said, trying to keep the edge out of his voice. The bard shyly handed it over, took another step backward, and readjusted the strap to his harp case. It was a simple disc, no larger than the palm of a woman's hand, engraved with a swan. Someone had used it for a tool and left the edges slightly battered. The leather, slipped through a worn hole, looked fairly new. There was no inscription. "You were kind to me, for one thing," Angus said, "because, I don't know, you're the one to take it?" His voice trailed lamely away. At Ian's questioning glance, Angus grinned. "Give it to your woman friend," he said, "in Neverlos." "Wait," Ian demanded as the bard turned to go. "I never said I was going to..." "Don't forget," Angus cried as he strode away. "Give it to her when you see her." Ian cursed as Angus strode further, yet further away. The lad was walking impossibly fast. Ian followed a few steps, then stopped. He had no time to go chasing after a bard, medallion or no. It would have to wait. Later, when the monotony of riding grew unbearable, he removed the medallion from its place in his saddlebags to examine it further. Tracing the swan with his fingers and using Atma to see things his eyes could not, his world was inside of this metal thing for an instant. The sounds around him, even the horse's ungainly plodding, faded away. He sensed nothing about the medallion, not a faint odor of magic. Ian refused to carry a cursed thing all the way to Neverlos, but if the medallion were such a thing, it was well concealed. He considered throwing it away, but thought again. The priestess might find some use for it, and perhaps it was cursed. The priestess more than deserved it, if so. The faint rush of water reached his ears. Somewhere in the trees, at the end of the road he traveled, would be an arm of the river Noslarog. Beyond, by about a 2-day ride, lay Neverlos.